You're listening to The Aaron Carrera Show. And now your host, Aaron Carrera.
Good morning, everybody. Good morning, good morning, good morning. It is Thursday, June 20th, and you are listening to The Aaron Carrera Show with me, your host, Aaron. I know my lovely announcer, Brian, already said that, but sometimes I just like to confirm. It is 10:03 a.m. if you are listening live. I'm here in Pacific time zone in sunny Southern California. And if you're listening in the archives, then it's whatever day and time it is whenever you're listening. We are going to be talking about the summer solstice because that is happening today at 1:50 p.m., which for me is 3 hours and 46 minutes from now. So I thought it would be fun for us to talk about the solstice and do some rituals. I'm going to share some rituals you could do on your own, and we're going to do versions of them together as well. But before we get into that, I just want to offer a little bit of news and updates and business. So first of all, this show is brought to you by me, Aaron Carrera, Aaron at 1-2-listen.com. And if you want to come find me and work with me, you can do chat, phone, email-based services. I've got all kinds of channeled readings, personalized EFT tapping sessions, tarot card readings. I've got all kinds of fun little specials at 1-2-listen.com/Aaron. That's Aaron with an E. 1-2-listen.com/Aaron. And you can also come find me on social media. On Facebook, I'm at 1-2-listen-Aaron. Or sorry, Aaron at the School for Heroines. On Instagram, I'm at 1-2-listen-Aaron. Or anywhere at Aaron Carrera Show. It all starts to, everything starts to connect up to everything at some point. Because if you have followed me online, you know I have a few different things that I do. I work here at 1-2-listen and 1-2-radio. And I'm also a performer and a writer. And I wanted to let you all know that I have a very fun, easy, breezy, sexy beach read being published July 2nd. That is a Tuesday. It's coming out on a Tuesday, but in advance of the 4th of July weekend. And it's because it's a beach read. It's, what can I say? Life's a beach and so's my book. Ha 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 ha. So I put a link up in the chat area where we chat back and forth to the book. You can pre-order it as a Kindle book, as an ebook. You can also, on July 2nd, it will also be available as a paperback or a hard copy. And I'll remind you again next week. But I'm pretty proud of this book. It's called Bad Sugar Baby. It is irreverent. It is sassy and saucy and fun. It is the opposite of trauma porn. I'm not saying that there isn't trauma in the world, but you know, so one of the things I wanted to do when writing this book is I wanted to write a book about somebody who, well, here, let me explain to you what it is. In Bad Sugar Baby, the lead character is Ollie, and Ollie is a very blunt, cash-strapped, 31-year-old aspiring writer living in Los Angeles, California. She finds herself pink-slipped from the job that she has as the social media manager slash personal lackey to a reality TV star who's turned into a social media influencer who's just ridiculous. And Ollie basically kind of quits and kind of loses the job all at the same time because she's tired of sugarcoating the truth. So now she's got these bills piling high and she's struggling to find a new job, and her dreams have been on hold for a while because of this job that took over her life that she hated anyway. She goes to have her hair cut by her best girlfriend. Her best girlfriend's a hairstylist and a single mom and a sugar baby. And she has a long-term boyfriend who helps her pay for her bills. And her friend says, why don't you try being a sugar baby? And Ollie's like, I am not right. I'm not, you know, hot in that Instagram filter kind of way. I'm not like a gym rat. I don't work out. I don't have, you know, plastic anything. And her friend's like, so what? There's a niche for every market. And Ollie decides, you know what? She wants to be a non-narrative fiction writer, and she has a degree in journalism. She decides she wants to try it out and to write a story about her experiences, see if she can get published, and maybe make a little cash along the way. So she doesn't have any moral compunctions with the idea of being a sugar baby at all. For her, what she's going to try to do is she's going to try to exploit the system that's designed to exploit her. But it turns out she's not very good at it. She has a serious allergy to nonsense. She has a talent for putting her foot in her mouth. And she gets involved in a roller coaster of tangled lies and curveball revelations that just become a crash course in the true worth and cost of love and life. So that's called Bad Sugar Baby. It's a very fun read. I'm kind of proud of it, if you can't tell. I'm not going to say that it's necessarily, Jane Austen, but it's really, really fun. And if you are into something a little saucy and irreverent, and the reason, like I was saying, the reason I wrote it is I wanted to write a story about somebody who was curious about sexuality and sensuality and her body, and who wasn't necessarily ashamed of that, but wasn't perfect. She's not like some perfect beauty. She's far from perfect. She's very flawed in many ways. But she's also vulnerable, and she's also willing to try things, and she's also resourceful, and she's also creative. And she's able to stand up for herself when she needs to. And that's why it sort of surprises her when she actually starts falling in love with someone. It's definitely not what she had imagined. Nothing about what she encounters is what she imagined it would be. And so I would say that if you like things like Bridget Jones or Sex and the City or Pretty Woman, this might be something you would enjoy. If you like Nora Ephron too, because there's certainly a level of, I'm not going to say sarcasm, but she's a little bit of a firecracker and she's smart. She's very smart. It's just that sometimes she uses that to get in her own way. Like she just can't kowtow to people who don't deserve it. Let's put it that way. Anyway, so I'm proud of that. I put a link up in the chat. If you want to come chat and talk about summer solstice stuff, now we're going to move on to talking about the summer solstice stuff. If you want to come chat, find us over on Facebook. If you're on 12radio.com, you'll see a link that says chat with me on Fa or chat with us on Facebook. It'll bring you to our 12radio group. And that is where we can talk back and forth in the comment section if you would like to. All right. All right, everybody. Let's all take a nice collective deep breath in and hold it at the top. And let it go. So, how's the summer treating you, huh? Summer, June 20th, 2024. When I was a little girl, I would get up at the crack of dawn. Well, who are we kidding? I still do. I still get up at the crack of dawn. It's just the next part I don't do. When I was little, I grew up, our house was at the edge of a forest in northern central Minnesota. And about this time of year, I would run outside barefoot so that I could run my feet through the dewy grass. I loved the feeling of the dew and the fresh, dewy grass on my feet and just the kind of co cool tingle of it all. But the sun was up and to the right, which for me would have been to the east at that moment in time. Was a big forest to the left or west were some more houses in the little neighborhood I lived in. But if I were to continue north, the forest wrapped around our little neighborhood. So I could walk into the forest, although I never would have walked into the forest barefoot. But you could walk into the forest and you could pick raspberries and wild strawberries. We also had a huge garden growing up. One huge half of our lawn was a garden where my dad was lined by raspberry bushes, and he also grew roses, and then he would grow all kinds of things. Sometimes it changed from year to year, but usually there was a pumpkin patch. Of course, you couldn't eat the pumpkins yet. That's not till autumn. But there would be peas, tomatoes, carrots, sometimes corn, sometimes one year he grew potatoes, roses. I think I said roses. And then on the back of the house was lined with strawberry bushes. And then we also had two maple trees in our backyard. We had two giant oak trees, three maple trees, two birch trees, and then a little small apple tree. Just a crab apple tree. It wasn't edible apples. Well, I don't know. Maybe you can turn crab apple into something, but we never did. Anyway, it was just alive, our house was just alive and the woods were alive. And I loved to do that. And then I'd go back in the house and, eat cereal or whatever we would have for breakfast, which by and large was cereal. And then I would just spend my mornings reading books. Oh, I loved summer. Books, 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 and then go for a walk in the woods, imagining I was a character in the book. And then, I mean, that was just such a treat. And then, of course, usually in the afternoons, depending on how old I was, I still had to play piano every day. And my parents probably had some kind of math game for us to play because that's how they were. And by the time I was 9 years old, I also babysat. So I didn't babysit too many kids when I was nine, just my sister and then one other family down the street. But by the time I was 11, I was probably babysitting for three or four families. 11, can you imagine? Do 11-year-olds babysit anymore? By the time I was 13, I babysat. In the summertime, I could babysit probably every day. I babysat all through high school. I started playing piano professionally when I was 17, but and that took over some of my babysitting income, but I babysat for years and until I went to basically then I became a professional musician at 17, and then I went to massage school at 18, became a professional massage therapist at 19, put myself through college that way, and including to some in addition to some scholarships. But I'll tell you, I just have always been a working fool, However, even the babysitting was fun because we would do all kinds of fun things outside. If it was nice out, we would create obstacle courses in people's backyards. I loved doing that. I would create obstacle courses with the kids. And half of the fun was creating obstacle courses. Half of the fun was, coming up with all these ingenious things that the kids would have to do, and me too, and we'd play, and then we'd end, running through sprinklers or whatever. I wonder, does anybody do anything like that anymore? I know that my sister's little boy, they play outside a lot, and he has a very Even though he's a little guy, he's 5 and a half, almost six, he is really interested in how things work. For example, last year for his birthday, I gave him Mousetrap, and he was the game. You remember that game where you put together a mousetrap? And he was just a little too young for it, but he became obsessed with putting it together and then taking it apart and then putting it together and taking it apart. Like, he was obsessed with that stuff. Now, my sister and brother-in-law are very big on having him be not very digitized. He has to do chores to earn video time. He doesn't get to just look at the iPad. He has to do certain, like, they have certain rules about how much screen time he gets to have, even if he does do chores. But I think it's really, I mean, I don't have kids. I really can't say, but I think it's great, actually. I'm kind of an old school jerk, I think, about it. But I notice, like, my niece and nephews, they're all very well behaved. They're not perfect kids. Trust me, on my side of the family, me as opposed to my husband's, they are all willful little kids. They all are very willful and very smart, which is fabulous. You don't want to squash the spirit, but you do need to work with that. And a few days ago, I was out to dinner with my voice teacher, actually. And we both love kids. We both think they're so fun. But we noticed this family near us, lovely family, but the kids were just on their iPads the whole time. They were little. So I get it. Mom and dad want to go and have dinner and have a glass of wine and relax. Let's just give the kids the iPad. I do get it. But then one of their kids just kept getting more and more excitable. And at first, we were engaging with him, but then he just started getting way over the top. He became so high energy and so crazy. He was like knocking chairs over, and then he wanted his iPad all the time. And I just thought, yeah. And the parents just were like, okay, fine, here's your iPad. And I know it is not popular, or maybe it would be frowned upon. Maybe you'd even get in trouble in this day and age, like what my dad would have done, which is he would have said, you better quit your screaming, or I'll give you something to scream about. And then he would have taken us outside if we were being bad, and he would have taken us to the car and spanked us. It's not that we went out to dinner that often, I guess I'll say that much. We definitely fought. We fought a lot, but we would get in trouble. And if my dad gave, there was a look that if my dad gave us that look, that it was over. You didn't fight anymore because you knew. You just knew. And I've seen it with all of my nieces and nephews. There's a moment. Actually, my nieces and nephews in Italy are, from what I can tell, way better behaved than the ones here. But there's a moment where anybody gives one of those kids a look, it's done. The kids are not badly behaved anymore. And even kids with attention issues, right? I know I'm being an old fart. Oh, kids these days. But I wonder, you know, at the same time, like, I was with my voice teacher. I had been with him all day. I drove down, I got to his house at 2 o'clock. Here we were, 7 o'clock. We can sit in comfortable silence, but we also, now, yes, granted, he's one of my best friends, but we never run out of things to say to each other. And again, I don't mean to slam people who just sit and look at their phones, but it's like, why are you going out to dinner, ordering a lovely Italian dinner and a glass of wine, and then just sitting and looking at your phone? I don't know. For to me, I just think there's a lot that's lost when we do that. I don't know why I went on that rampage. I guess I was just telling you about summers of childhood to get into the summer solstice, because today's the summer solstice. But I know it's hard to have kids, especially when every other kid has a device. And it's not like I didn't just hang out with my teenage niece and nephew, who do look at their devices sometimes, but they're also present for conversations. And I think we have to be very mindful about letting ourselves become too digitized, just like we talked about last week. So, speaking of not becoming too digitized, we're going to talk about the summer solstice and different ways that we can celebrate it. And we're even going to do a little mini celebrations together. Okay. So the summer solstice, of course, the longest day of the year, right? And many, many different cultures throughout history celebrated this, the longest day of the year, with some sort of ancient festival. Sometimes we might also call it by other names, but for my people, which would be, you know, Scandinavians, Celts, you know, because my ancestry is Sami, which is the far northern part of Finland, the indigenous people up there, Finnish, Swedish, Norwegian, Scottish, Welsh, English. And then apparently 3% Sardinian. If you don't know where Sardinia is, it's one of the islands of Italy. It goes Corsica, Sicily. No, Corsica, Sardinia, Sicily, I believe. If you're looking at the Mediterranean, they're close to the boot. Anyway, I think. I don't know. I don't have relatives there anymore, as far as I know. Although maybe I should do 23andMe. My sister did it. Maybe I should do it and find out. And it's funny, you know, because my husband years ago was actually stationed there long before I knew him. It's just so funny that I happen to have DNA specifically from Sardinia, and he was stationed there for several years when he was in the Italian National Police Force. Just kind of a funny little fact, funny little drawing together of us, a little attraction there. But so for my people, as I say in quotations, by which I mean pagans, kids, I'm talking about pagans, the summer solstice marks the height of the sun god's power. Right? It is the sun's zenith. And therefore, this is a very joyful day. It is a joyous, joyous day. And how could it not be, in a way, if you think about it, just the glory of having a full, long day of sun and celebrating endless summer vibes, right? But it also has a little sadness, because we mark this day because we know this is the longest day of the year, and now we are going to prepare for our days to grow shorter. So while we are celebrating the seemingly eternal sun, we are also mourning that all things must come to an end. And so it's that honoring of the dark and the light, the honoring of the yin and the yang, the honoring of our duality that becomes a holistic experience of life, if we allow it to be, if we allow ourselves to honor all aspects of life, all aspects, all facets of the diamond, then here are some ways that we can mark the solstice for ourselves. So, first of all, one of the number one things that people have done throughout time is ritual burning and ritual funerary fires, right? Funerary meaning, you know, funeral. Now, the Celts believed that there were two solar gods, two solar deities, the summer sun and the winter sun. And they believed that the summer sun and the winter sun battled for light on Midsummer's Eve. That would be today, tonight. And so, and guess who wins? Well, the winter sun, because the summer sun dies and the winter sun begins. So, in commemoration of the defeat and the death of the summer sun, for the Celts, many midsummer customs were entwined with ritual burnings, right? So, one thing that, now, of course, back in the olden days, they would also do other sacrifices, and we don't need to do those things. Like if you're, there's horror movies all about that. Did you see Midsommar that came out around 5 years ago, or The Wicker Man from like 50 years ago? But what we can do, because there's no need to do any sacrificing here, to honor the death of the summer sun, you can light a fire and throw all that which no longer sustains you into its flame. Or you can do something even simpler. You can get your journal. That's the sound of me turning a page on my journal. Ha, sound effects. And you can write down a list of that which no longer serves you, right? Okay, bad body image. My body image is actually not as bad as it used to be, but that's because every year I write that on my list, right? All the things that no longer serve you. So maybe for some of you, that might be certain relationships, looky-loos, chaos, drama queens. Maybe it's a belief you have about yourself or the world. Maybe it's poverty mentality. Maybe it's just getting by instead of thriving and having a healthy savings account. So you might write some of these things down, just getting by financially. Everything and anything that no longer serves you, you can write it down on a piece of paper, and then you can rip that out of your journal. And in a very safe space, for perhaps, for example, in a fire pit or in a ritualized dish that you might bless in the sink, you could light a little votive, and then you could take and burn that list. And I burn this list of that which no longer serves me to release it, right? I release it. I burn this list of that which no longer serves me, and I say goodbye and I release, right? So that you are actually burning it, and then you are releasing all of those things that no longer serve you. You could also burn offerings to the sun god, offerings like dried flowers, photographs. Medieval witches traditionally burned oak in their hearth, like in their little fireplace or in their hearth, right? And they would use that to keep the fire going for a year and use the fires. The goal of burning the oak in the heath was to keep the fire going for a year, but they would save their ashes for ritual purposes, right? So you could save the ashes of your midsummer fire and then use them as the base of next year's flame, or you can return them to the earth. If you, for example, write your list and you burn it and you release it, you could take the ashes and then you could go outside and you could scatter them and return them to the earth in the honoring of the cycle of life. So that is one thing you could do. Here's another thing you can do. You can visit a holy well or a holy river or a holy water space. So, for example, people would make pilgrimages. Have you ever made a pilgrimage to a holy well or a holy river? I have. I have gone to a holy well in just outside, it would have been in the Pyrenees. So I was outside of Perpignan, France, and I drove up into the Pyrenees and we went to a holy well and we made an offering of coins to the holy well. I've also gone to do ritual bathing in the Ganges River in India, way, way up north, in a little village called Gangotri. So it's so far north that you could actually drink the water. I've also done ritual bathing in Varanasi, which the water is not so clean, but I did it. And I've done ritual bathing in the Ganges River outside of Rishikesh, India, which some of you might know because that's where the Beatles met the Maharishi, Mahesh Yogi. But it doesn't have to be the Ganges River or a well in a little village in the Pyrenees outside the Cather ruins, right? Some 14th century village or 14th century ruins in the village that sprout up around it. It could be that you decide to create a ritual to honor a water source in your life as holy. For example, what if you have a well? Could be a wishing well, or it could be an actual well. You know, my grandparents' farm, they had a cistern. That's what they called it. It was a deep well full of water. And while you wouldn't put coins in the drinking water, you could go to something like a drinking well or a cistern, and you could lay flowers around the edge. You could solicit cures and make offerings that way to the resident spirit of the water, to the holy healing water. You could, you know, just like people who do perform baptisms can turn water into a holy ritual. I was baptized in a Lutheran church, and then I also went through a ritual baptism again in a lake in Alabama when I was younger. And it was the existing water that was used through the blessings and the intentions to do the healing, to have a renewal of spirit, to be reborn. Or, for example, in Rome, in ancient Rome, many people used to go down to the Tiber River. And down, if you've ever been to Rome, if you go down to certain parts of the river, if you've been to Rome, you may know that there's the city as it is now, but the original city is actually a story or two below it. And you can go down to certain parts of Rome and you can crawl down or step down into these depressed areas where the original city was built, including along the river. There's parts along the river there where you can go down and you can see, you go down a little bit, there are the original ancient temples to Fortuna. Fortuna, of course, the goddess of fortune. And in the olden days, people used to go down there and they would drink blessed wine, and they would hang garlands, and they would honor the goddess Fortuna on this day. So you can find a water source and make it, you can perform a ritual with this water service, source, or even just go there with the intention of participating in an honoring. Because if you think about it, wells and rivers, they both represent the womb of the goddess, the womb of the great mother, a space much like Midsummer Sun, where life and death are possible, right? Because remember, we are honoring the life and death of the summer sun, which gets conquered by the winter sun. We are honoring and celebrating the fact that we are alive, and that is a gift, and we will all die, and when we die, hopefully is a long time from now, but nothing is promised, so we are honoring our life and our death. So if you go to a well or a river, you can go to a place where life and death are possible, life and death intermingle. And then in that maternal divine mother space, swirling abyss space, especially if you go tonight on a late June evening, you may first go to the water and present yourself as being there to honor life and death and to be grateful for being alive. And then you can enter into a sacred meditation or even a conversation with that source of water so that you might find guidance, right? You could Google your zip code. You could Google holy water, holy well, local holy well. Because maybe you live in an area where there is a water source that original people found sacred. That, for example, there are many where, you know, where I grew up, where I just was in Minneapolis, there are many, many lakes that were used and believed to be sacred. So, for example, one of the lakes that I visited in Minneapolis, I went for a walk around Lake Nokomis. And Nokomis is a Native American word meaning grandmother, right? She's the great grandmother. You could go to Lake Nokomis if you're in Minneapolis, and you could enter into conversation with her as you walk around her, or as you sit at one of the beaches and gaze into her water, or even enter into her water and ask for guidance. Yes, bring offerings, be sure to bring something that you will leave and something you wish to sacrifice to receive blessings in kind. But at this point in our world, I think one of the reasons I brought up, sometimes you might want to leave your phone at home or just keep it in your handbag or whatever, is because I feel like when I go out into nature and I interact with nature, it's wonderful, but it's not just wonderful. It's like nature is begging us to interact with it again. It's almost like we've become like vehicles and cars and inanimate objects, and we are not engaging with nature. And when I engage with nature, it is teeming with life. There's so much response, so much response, and there's so much guidance there for you. Another thing you could do is you could go to that water source and you could tell the water source your problems and then gaze into the water for a while. Just listen to what the water has to tell you. I feel that you will be surprised at what the water has to tell you in response to your problems. And you don't have to, it's great. Yes, it is great if you can bring something to sacrifice. Yes. But also, if you, even if you don't have something specific to sacrifice, years ago, I was working with a shaman who told me that when you go hug a tree and put your hands on the tree and you speak to the tree and you tell the tree your problems and ask the tree to help you, the tree is also still already getting your carbon dioxide, right? We get oxygen from the trees, it gets carbon dioxide from us. There is an exchange of energy. And the tree doesn't have a human experience. So it gets to take our human experience and then it gets to, ingest that for itself and get the reverberation of that back for itself. So that is for you to know that when you are engaging with nature, sometimes I'll pluck a hair from my head. Sometimes I might bring something specific to honor. Sometimes I simply have a conversation with nature. And then I ask what I can do in return sometimes as well. I do think it's important to balance the energy. Okay, another thing we can do for the summer solstice is fresh flowers and flower crowns, like we do at May Day, right? So, as part of midsummer celebrations, people will decorate trees, poles, and themselves with ornate ribbons and flowers. Yes, it's similar to Beltane, but what we are doing when we are talking specifically about midsummer is a midsummer floral decoration is actually commemorating the impregnation of the goddess, right? So here at Beltane, she met with the sun god, and now at midsummer, she is pregnant. So flowers are an important part of this day. You can make a flower wreath. You can line your holy water spaces with flowers. You can even plant some flowers. If you are the kind of person who enjoys a cut flower bouquet, this might be a great time to bring some flowers into your home with the intention of blessing your home and impregnating your dreams, right? What are your dreams? What are the dreams that you seeded back in May? Let's honor that you are now pregnant with that dream and that it is going to be born. So, some traditional herbs and flowers. You could use herbs, like you could use essential oils too. You could put essential oils around your home to celebrate this time. Lavender, mugwort, rose, chamomile, St. John's wort, yarrow, sunflowers, dandelion. I saw that, that brand, Mrs. Meyers. I was at the store the other day and I saw that they have a dandelion scented soap, and I almost bought it. It smelled wonderful. It smelled like dandelions. I know some people think of dandelions as weeds, but I love them. I think that they're so resilient. Turn the dandelions into wine, right? So Celtic legend also says that at this time, flowers are brighter and more magical than usual. So you could go to a flower garden, where I grew up in Sauk Rapids, Minnesota, and the town next door is called St. Cloud, and St. Cloud has a beautiful, really an astonishingly gorgeous rose garden called Munsinger Gardens, and it has incredible, incredible roses. Here we have the Huntington Gardens over in Pasadena. If you're in Southern California or in Los Angeles, you can go into a flower garden. You can bask in the healing power of flowers. Okay, here's another way that we can celebrate solstice. So we just mentioned that flowers are used to celebrate the impregnation of the goddess, right? So there's no reason that we can't engage in a little bit of our own Venusian activity, honoring of Venus or Aphrodite or fertility goddesses. Many weddings in June, of course, but it could also just be a wonderful time to make a confession of love, right? Think about it. Summer is, oh, when I was young, summer was for dating and romance, all of that glory and solar passion. So it is a great time for June, named after the Roman goddess Juno, who was the patroness of women and marriage, not so much the young sexual love, but specifically marriage, right? But June is, of course, the number one month for weddings. I read, or no, I saw an Instagram video that said that was because back in the days when people bathed once a year, usually they took their bath in May so that then they would get married in June because they would still smell relatively nice. I don't know if that's true. That's just an Instagram video I saw once, but it's kind of funny to think about. I like to think that it's really because of the goddess Juno, and because after the romance of May, this is a time where we get married. Now, I myself got married on the winter solstice. Isn't that funny? But I did. I got married specifically on the winter solstice, on the shortest day of the year, so that I would have something beautiful to remind myself that even in the darkest day of the year, there is still light and love in this world. So that's why we did it on the winter solstice. Anyhow, so if you want to make some confessions of love, I'm going to say be wise. If you've only been dating for 2 weeks, maybe, well, be very wise. But for example, maybe if you're like me and you're an old married lady now and you've been with your partner for 12 years, that might be a wonderful time to write a love letter, a long, beautiful love letter, or to bring flowers to a partner, or to turn on music and dance, just slow dance. Right? Something that sanctifies and honors your union. Just could be going for a nice walk together, holding hands this evening. Could be wonderful. And if you don't have a partner and you're not interested in that, you could also take the time to say, I love you to other people who deserve it. You could call family or friends or children or parents. And you could just say, you know what? I love you. So there's all kinds of fun love divination things that you could do. You could, all kinds of fun little old-fashioned things I can think of right now. For example, I remember reading that in Sicily in the olden days, on this day, lovers would cut their hair, tie it with ribbon, and then give it to their lover. Or if you're doing a ritual fire, you could pass a stick through the fire three times, each time saying the name of your lover and then blessing the love with your lover. You could honor your love with a ritual flame at this time if you wanted. But I'm thinking of all the old things my grandmother used to tell me. Like, this would be the night where you would walk seven times clockwise around a church saying, with seed. You would spread seeds. You walk 7 times. What did she tell me? 7 times clockwise around a church, scattering seeds and saying, "Seeds, with these seeds I sow, let the one that is my true love let me know." Something like that. My grandmother was full of all kinds of stories like that. You could, when I was little, I used to always twist the, when I would get an apple, I would twist the little stem of the apple and I would count A, B, C, and or count, say my letters, A, B, C, and wherever the stem came off, that was going to be the name of my future husband. Well, joke's on me because I really did get a lot of different letters. But I remember getting C a number of times, and I'll tell you, I did marry a C. That's true. But you could, there's an ancient Roman midsummer spell where you take a seed, you eat an apple, and you take a seed from that apple, and you call it by your lover's name. So, Carlo for me, right? You take the seed from that apple, and you say, Carlo, and you flick it to the ceiling. If it hits the ceiling and the seed, if it doesn't reach the ceiling, then your love will not last. But if it comes back to you, the love is returned. I mean, you know, it's kind of a just make sure you have low ceilings, right? Make sure the seed is not too wet. All kinds of fun, different things you could do. But I'm interested, if you want to do a little love divination, you could light a candle. Light a candle that you bless for love, and then you could start doing some automatic writing where you just free write about what you're looking for in a future lover or how you want your relationship to go. And then see if you don't start channeling. You very well may channel some information about your current or future love. It could be very fun. All right, another thing, and then with this next one, I'm going to say engage with caution. But this is a time to communicate with the fae, a time to communicate with the fairy folk. So, according to legend, Midsummer's Eve is one of three fairy festivals. The three fairy festivals are Halloween, Beltane, and Midsummer's Eve. And that means the fairy, the fae, the fairy folk, the supernatural creatures. Whimsical woodland creatures, they are supposedly more visible than ever. Think about the Shakespearean play, Midsummer Night's Dream, right? Titania, the queen of the fairies, and Oberon, the king of the fairies, are engaging with humans left and right. Puck is a fairy. They are messing with the humans left and right, right? This is a time, right, when the fae are supposedly dancing through the forest and running errands for their queen, hoping not to be caught, but a little more visible. Halloween, because of course the veil is very thin. We could say the same about Beltane in a certain kind of way. So, what could you do to interact with fairy folk? And before you say you don't believe, did you know that in Iceland, most people, I think it's like a very high percentage, like 97% or some incredibly high percentage of people believe in fairy folk in Iceland. Iceland is a country, an island country where many people are kind of related, but they have 100% literacy. People are incredibly well educated and they believe. So I'm just putting it out there. I myself once was, I was on mushrooms, I'll admit, I was on mushrooms. And I was running around and I kept seeing little, I guess I would call them gnomes. They were little gnomes and they kept saying, "Hey, come here." But I didn't want to go with the gnomes because I had read enough books to know that if you go with the gnomes, if you go with the fairy folk, you could get lost. You could get lost. So I didn't want to disappear and get lost with them. So I was like, well, I kind of wish I had in a way just to see what would have happened, but I didn't. I didn't go with them because I didn't want to get lost in the woods or who knows what. But if you want to engage with fairy folk with respect, with caution, keep your wits about you. Don't get drunk on some fairy wine now. Get lost out in the woods. But during this time, you can do some of the following things. You can leave food out for them, right? If you find a fairy ring, do you know what those are like? Have you ever been walking through the woods and you see a little, like a naturally occurring ring in the grass or a naturally occurring ring of grass and dirt in the pathway or something like that? Do not disturb their rings, right? Just it's a I know it's a superstition, but be respectful, right? They say, now this is an old legend, but they say the safe way to investigate a fairy ring is to run around it 9 times. If you run around it 9 times, that will allow you to see the fairies dancing, but still be protected. That's legend. I've never run around a fairy ring 9 times. I don't know. Oh, by the way, to do it 10 times apparently is dangerous. I've heard that too. Another superstition is that you must do this under a full moon. Well, guess what? Full moon's tomorrow, kids. Another superstition is you should do it, but you should wear a hat backwards so that you confuse the fae and pretend prevent an attack. Now, I think that if you're respectful and you bring a gift and you leave a gift for them, like food, just be respectful. But you could interact if you wanted. Okay, another fun thing we can do. Ooh, this one is really fun and very easy to do, especially if you don't live, like in the woods of Ireland where the fairy live. Although I'll say I wasn't in Ireland when I saw those gnomes, or gnomes are more Scandinavian, aren't they? Anyhow, you could do a beauty spell. So this is a festival of beauty. This time of year, midsummer, it's a festival of beauty. Think about it, all the Venusian energy, the Juno energy. Think about what a wedding is like. You put on this gorgeous dress, you do your makeup, you're carrying flowers, you're exchanging beautiful rings. I'm looking at my wedding ring right now. My partner put on a beautiful suit. He looked so handsome, right? People dress, put flowers out everywhere and ribbons, right? Some people equate, think about that poem. Let's see, let's find it. Love is beauty. Ode. It's ode to a Grecian. Can I spell ode to a Grecian urn? I should have it memorized by now. But that idea at the end, where love is beauty, beauty love. It's a long poem, but beauty is truth. Oh, sorry, not love. Beauty is truth. Truth, beauty. That is all you know on earth and all you need know, right? But for some people, now I'm not talking about cosmetics companies and plastic surgery, although if that's what you want to do, far be it for me to say no, if that's what you find beauty. Although I'm very interested in also what is unique to you. What is your unique beauty? I personally don't want a world where everybody looks the same. I like unique beauty. But for some people, and I'm going to talk about really the Neoplatonic tradition. Love was defined as a desire for beauty. And Aphrodite was a goddess of both love and beauty. Venus was a goddess of both love and beauty, right? So to be in love is a beautiful experience, right? So you could do a ritual face mask. And what you could be doing is imbuing that face mask with your desire for deepening your connection with spirit, deepening your connection to love, calling in love, deepening your existing relationship through beauty. In a way, when we are engaging with beauty, we really are engaging with an honoring of life. We are engaging with an honoring of creativity and art, sometimes health, right? And I think it's important for us to ask ourselves questions like, what are my unique beauties? Because I don't want us to have to think we need to change who we are to be beautiful. A rose is beautiful. A peony is beautiful. A petunia is beautiful. To me, a dandelion is beautiful. To some people, the Venus flytrap is beautiful. To some people, right? There are people who love that sort of thing. So, and actually, one of my best friends was just telling me there's such a thing as a goth garden where people cultivate all black and very dark purple and dark flowers and plants. I mean, that sounds amazing, right? That just sounds incredible. So, what do you find beautiful? This is a wonderful exercise that you can do on this day. What do you find beautiful? And then I want you to go look in a mirror and say, not what you find beautiful according to, like, well, I have a six pack, which is great if you do. That's fabulous, right? More like unfettered by advertising, and without judgment. If I look in this mirror, what do I find actually beautiful? Right? Are my curves beautiful? Am I muscular? Am I lean? Is the shape of my body and its design beautiful? Maybe you love something about yourself. Maybe you love your hair or your teeth or your cheekbones. Maybe you love the light in your eyes when you look back at yourself in love. Maybe you love being alive and your spirit is beautiful. Everyone has beauty. Everyone has unique beauty. Everyone has something wonderful about them and something beautiful about them. So I want you to think about, what do you find beautiful in you and what do you find beautiful in the world? And then I want you to think about, how can you cultivate that beauty for yourself and or for others, right? Because then we get back to, well, perhaps I cultivate the beauty by tending to my garden on this day or bringing flowers to an elderly neighbor just because, or surprising somebody with flowers, sending somebody a bouquet through a delivery service and just signing it, you know, secret admirer, or signing it a friend, or signing it, you're beautiful, right? I know we live in a world where some people will get a bouquet of flowers that says you're beautiful and they'll get all freaked out. But I'll tell you, I've done that to people a few times. I've sent them flowers and never told them it was from me and never heard about it. And I think it's kind of fun. It's like one of my little secrets, one of my little secret things I like to do, because I want to make the world more beautiful. I want to participate in beauty. I want people to have more joy in life. You know, even though some stories are hard and sad and some dramas and tragedies are important, I love tragedies. Like if we're talking about the ancient Romans and Greeks or Shakespeare, I love the tragedies too, but sometimes we need Midsummer Night's Dream, a beautiful comedy. Sometimes we need to surprise people, including ourselves, with beauty. So with that, I will leave you here. If you want to come find me, I want to listen. I will be available almost all day. And I'll be available tomorrow quite a bit. And on the weekend, just come find me, onetolisten.com/Erin. And until next week, I love you. Happy solstice. Bye-bye.